The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. It's some of your favorite Quentin Quarantinos back again, live and somewhat direct to you. My name is Ben Bolin. My ride or die co-host, Noel Brown, is off on an adventure, and we are off on an adventure all our own. This is part two of our exploration of unintended consequences, which, as super producer Casey Pegram mentioned in our first part of this series, is one of the easiest ways to define history. I'm still tripping out about that one, Casey. I thought that was a great definition.
I'm loving the unintended consequences so far, especially the political ramifications of air conditioning. That is not one that I had thought of even in the least. So I'm really excited to hear where we go in part two.
Yes, likewise. Now, because this is a two-part series, folks, if you haven't heard part one, you're still going to enjoy this, but it'll make you should listen to part one is what I'm saying. It'll make way more sense. So we're just going to pause for a second and then come back after you listen to part one. Casey, can we get like some waiting room music? Perfect. Welcome back. All right. So now that we're all caught up, as we said, in part one of this series, Casey and Noel and Spirit and I are not adventuring into this wild territory alone. We contacted an expert, the creator and host of the new iHeart podcast Flashback, who himself is, and I promise this is the last time I'll say it, Sean, who himself is a polymath, Sean Braswell. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me back, Ben. I had such a good time last time.
Through the magic of podcast editing. you're a natural, Sean. Yes, likewise. I think this has been, this has already been a pretty revelatory learning experience for me. And I think for you as well, Casey, right?
Absolutely. Like I said, I'm all ears. I am fascinated by this topic.
So in our previous episode, we learned that the YMCA, with the best of intentions, had done some somewhat villainous things to America's military forces. We also learned, as you said, Casey, that air conditioning has affected the world and society in ways that we didn't fully understand until Sean clued us in. But Sean, you had mentioned earlier that there was more to the story of cigarettes. And I think we got so excited when it was like, tell me more about air conditioning, tell me more about blah, 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 that we didn't fully explore the unintended consequences of cigarettes. Now, when we had left off in part one, you had made this brilliant connection between the loss of tax revenue during Prohibition and the way that Uncle Sam searched to make up for it, which ultimately became cigarette taxes. You said at the beginning, it wasn't stuff you would really notice unless you were literally a penny pincher, right?
That's right. And it wasn't just Uncle Sam that got into the bonanza that was cigarette taxes. A lot of states started to follow suit. I think Iowa was the first one in 1921. They enacted a state-level cigarette tax. And you know, by the 1930s, more than 30 states had done the same. But of course, not all states taxed at the same rate. But like we talked about, it was mostly pennies on the dollar. And so they were really just small-time criminals and smugglers that would take advantage of this different rate between states. And they might, you know, smuggle a few cartons of cigarettes from New Jersey over the river into New York and likewise. But it was not something that was a huge money-making venture for criminals yet.
Right. You know, surely I'm not the only person in the audience thinking this, but one of the things that mystified me when I moved to cities for the first time, you know, was that in cities, people could buy a single cigarette, a square or a Lucy, which I didn't understand for a long time. I think I knew that cigarettes were a big business, but I had no idea just how much money they were making across various various parts of the world, various parts of the US, and various levels of society. You know, I was one of those people who was super naive. When I learned about cigarette smuggling, it seemed so strange to me, you know, that one would smuggle something that was legal, but apparently it was kind of profitable at some point?
Absolutely. And it became really profitable after 1964. And that was when another well-intentioned act, we talked about the YMCA last time and their well-intentioned provision of cigarettes during World War I. Well, in 1964, the U.S. Surgeon General comes out with his famous smoking report, which links cigarette smoking to, you know, lung cancer and other causes of death. And it's at that point, a lot of the states say, we've got to do something about this. We have this major disincentive we can put on smoking, which is to increase the taxes we impose upon it. And so a lot of very progressive states like New York start to do that.
Right, right. Some of this is a, you know, it might be called a sin tax, right, in some parts of the world. Clearly, this is an economic lever that is pretty old and has been proven to work. Any New Yorkers in the audience will recognize this attempt in various other products, right? Like the idea that one should pay more in taxes for things like alcohol when Prohibition was repealed, or that one should maybe, I'm thinking, like, there was a silly example a few years ago, I want to say New York, with the idea of taxing sugary drinks like soda pop, right? And this stuff, these moves were almost universally reviled by a lot of people who are fans of booze or fans of cigarettes or fans of, you know, Fanta. I'm just, you know, we're based here in Atlanta, Sean. It's really difficult for us to think of a soda that's not Coca-Cola. But we're giving it the college go. So how much of a difference, though, are we talking? And how would this kind of operation, how would it work? Is it something that people started doing on a regular basis, like organized crime level involvement?
Absolutely. And to give you a sense for the profit margins involved here. So, for example, I think in New York, if you add in the state tax and then the city tax, it costs about $5.85 for a pack of cigarettes, or about $60 for a carton of cigarettes. Whereas in North Carolina, where I live, which is a very tobacco-friendly state because we produce a lot of tobacco, it's more like $5 in tax per carton. So you can make $55 per carton of cigarettes by selling North Carolina cigarettes in New York. And if you think about that, there are about 50,000 cartons that can fit on a truck. So if you're making about $5 in tax per carton, I mean, you're talking more than $2 million in potential profit per truck of cigarettes.
I think we got into the wrong business, Casey. Like, I, ethically, there are, I admit, a couple of problems, but we could have been smoke tycoons, man.
We missed our calling, Ben.
We missed our calling. And now we are, we missed our calling. We found our podcasting. But this might surprise people to realize that millions of dollars are on the line. And when we get to the idea of tax fraud, because that's what this is, tax fraud on this level, then I imagine this is something that the government is not going to take laying down, right?
No, not at all. I think the estimate is that New York State loses something like $1 billion in tax revenue because of black market cigarettes each year.
Wow. And I mean, clearly they're trying to catch people. They have to have some successful bust because how else would they get that estimate, right?
Exactly. And they are pursuing cigarette smuggling cases all the time. Just last year here in North Carolina, down in Fayetteville, they busted up an operation that I think was about an $8 million operation, involved 50 to 60 people. It was basically an unmarked candy store, a gray candy store building in Fayetteville that was basically the hideout for an enormous cigarette smuggling operation.
Okay, before I say this, I want to be very clear. I'm not condoning the actions of this cigarette smuggling ring, and we're certainly not advocating that anybody break the law. But honestly, you guys, it feels like those folks have lives that are so much more interesting than my own. You know, they're cigarette tycoons. They're going on cool road trips all the time, though I imagine they're probably quite stressful. Do you see this problem continuing into the future, Sean? Do you think this is like this illegal industry is going to be, you know, historically a flash in the pan, or is the money just too compelling?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just small crime syndicates in the U.S. It's terrorist groups. The Irish Republican Army, back in its heyday, was smuggling cigarettes. Saddam Hussein's son, Uday, was a cigarette smuggler. I don't know if you remember the first bombing of the World Trade Center back in New York in 1993. The terrorists who placed that truck bomb in the parking garage were funded thanks to cigarette smuggling. And you see it with terrorist training camps in Afghanistan, Hezbollah. Constantly, they're breaking up cigarette rings that lead to terrorist funding. And I think as long as there is a tax differential that creates an arbitrage opportunity for criminals, that sort of crime is going to continue. One of the silver linings, one of the bright patches to that, and which may eventually lead to a decline, because I don't think you can probably ever expect every state in the U.S. to get together and uniformly choose the same level of taxes, is that cigarette use is going down steadily. And I think ultimately that might be what kills cigarette smuggling, just the use of cigarettes overall. But even that is obviously a long-term venture.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into Hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences, with fewer people, and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.
Wait a second, though. I feel like we buried the lead. Terrorism? So you know, everybody knew one of the bad effects of cigarette smoking is cancer, but I think many of us are going to be surprised to learn that smoking cigarettes may actually be supporting terrorism. That's just not like my go-to conclusion.
No, and that's kind of what we do in the podcast episode on Flashback that we do. We sort of trace how this magnanimous gesture by the YMCA 100 years ago in World War I eventually leads to billions of dollars in revenue for terrorists.
And if you'd like to learn more, I certainly encourage you to do so. Do check out Flashback, because this is not the entirety of the twisted tale. And I think it's a journey worth taking. There was one case, Sean, that you had investigated on Flashback that spoke to me, and Casey maybe spoke to you in particular, being that we reside, like you, in the American South. And that is the concept of one of the most successful invasive species in this part of the world. Folks, you know it. You might love it. You might hate it. You don't know. But you are definitely aware of the monster known as kudzu.
That's right. Anyone who has spent any amount of time in the South, particularly on highways, has seen kudzu, the invasive vine, climbing everywhere. I think the most famous nickname for it is the vine that ate the South.
Yeah, yeah. And while that might sound riddled with hyperbole, it makes sense if you drive anywhere, you know, through the Carolinas, anywhere through Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama. Kudzu is a huge success story, biologically speaking. Now, I believe the vine originally came from China. Is that correct?
It was actually a Japanese ornamental vine, and it first appeared in the U.S. actually at the World's Fair in 1876. So if you can imagine, there's this centennial international exhibition in Philadelphia. You've got things like Henry Heinz's ketchup, Graham Bell's first telephone, Thomas Edison's telegraph, and then you've got a Japanese pavilion that basically has kudzu in it as an ornamental vine, and it was popular for a few decades as an ornamental vine, and especially in New England in the U.S.
Yeah, like a porch decoration, I think, which might surprise a lot of us in the audience today to learn that, yes, once upon a time, people purposefully put kudzu up in their house or on the sides of their domicile, and they additionally paid for it. But this, you know, kudzu was not going to settle for being a nifty porch decoration. How did it go from, you know, something that would be in an 1800s edition of like Home and Garden to this thing that spans miles across the South?
Well, kudzu, as prolific as it is, got a big boost in the 1930s, and that was during the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression. And as you know, during the Dust Bowl, a severe drought over the American plains caused sort of winds and choking dust to sweep this broad swath of America from Texas to Nebraska. And so there was a real problem with soil erosion. And President Franklin Roosevelt had a pretty good idea when he took office. He decided he was going to solve two problems at once, basically a labor shortage and this soil erosion, by creating this new organization he called the Civilian Conservation Corps. And one of the things he had this army of new government employees do in the Dust Bowl area was to plant what they called a miracle vine, kudzu. And they planted more than 70 million kudzu seedlings during the 1930s in government-run nurseries, and farmers were paid, you know, I think it was something like $8 an acre to plant the vine. So the government was paying people to plant kudzu as a soil erosion measure.
Okay, and ostensibly, you know, on the surface, that makes sense, right? We want something to hold the ground where the ground is supposed to be. And of course, during the Dust Bowl, we are looking at a tremendous ecological disaster. You know, famine is on the rise in the U.S. at this time. This is also, you know, from a long-term position, this could spell agricultural doom if something is not done. So it's not as if this was an idea that they undertook lightly, but it is probably an idea they undertook out of desperation. As you said, they also wanted to give people jobs.
Exactly. And, you know, desperate situations call for desperate measures, but sometimes that in turn creates even more desperate situations.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. You know, as we're talking about kudzu, I'm thinking about the various places here in our fair metropolis of Atlanta where human beings appear to have just lost a battle against this vine. You know, we're so familiar with descriptions of hungry ecosystems, right? Like jungles that, due to their humidity and due to the flora and fauna, they seem to literally eat buildings and the works of man. But this is occurring in a city near you if you live in the American South. Now, it also reminds me of Fantasia, and Casey, sorry, I know I use this example all the time, where Mickey Mouse is the sorcerer's apprentice, decides to automate the mop process, right? Because he doesn't want to mop his boss's castle or whatever. And then the mops get out of control. And next thing you know, he is literally and figuratively in over his head. Was there a point like that with kudzu? Was there a point where the workers' program said, like, hey, we should stop?
No, I don't think there was any real inkling in the 1930s just how invasive this vine would eventually be. I mean, in fact, even after the 30s, people who were building the railroads and the highways across the South, when we started having a you know, an interstate highway system, they chose kudzu as a vegetation they could use to cover causeways and embankments to, you know, make things look a little nicer on these interstate roads. And kudzu, you know, there were no cows there to eat it on the highway. There were no horses to eat it. So once you planted it, it didn't really have any natural enemies. So it could just grow and grow and grow along highways and railways, which is still predominantly where you see it today.
Yeah. And it's taken over, you know, entire lots, maybe where development of a neighborhood stalled or a building was condemned. Because quickly, you know, when you get into reconstruction or you get into development, it becomes apparent that cleaning up kudzu is an enormously difficult task because of its growth rate, but it can also be an enormously expensive task, also partially because of its growth rate. One thing I think would be pretty familiar to you in North Carolina there is the creative way that various human institutions have tried to combat kudzu or to live with it. Everybody in the South has at least once heard about a recipe using kudzu. Have you guys ever tried anything with kudzu?
I've never tried it. I know that a lot of people consider it to be something on the lines of spinach. You can eat it cooked or raw in quiches or salads, but I've never done it personally.
What about you, Casey?
No, I cannot speak to you having consumed kudzu before. This is all just reminding me, like, personal experience growing up in Georgia. We had terrible problems in our backyard with a neighbor who had planted bamboo next door, and the bamboo would just find its way underneath the fence and shoot up into our backyard. And you cut some down and it just regrows again. And I'm seeing here online that kudzu and bamboo have a very similar effect when they're introduced into an environment. They tend to be very difficult to get out.
Yeah, interesting story with our city. Bamboo grows pretty well here because of our climate. And for a while, I had a dream job when I learned about this in college. For years and years, the Atlanta Zoo had a crack team of 9 guys whose entire job was to go around the city and gather bamboo for the pandas at the zoo. That's all they did. They woke up in the morning, they went to various people's houses and little hidden, you know, areas of the wild. They gathered bamboo and they showed up to meet some very excited pandas. That is a dream job. I mean, maybe even better than cigarette tycoon. I don't know.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, for product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
See new things. Try new things. Go back centuries while living in the moment. Forge new paths while discovering old ones. Pedal, paddle, and paint while trekking, tasting, and tailoring experiences that transform you into a better version of yourself. Immerse yourself in the world by activating your mind, your heart, and your body on a river cruise exclusively from Avalon Waterways. Save with limited time offers at AvalonWaterways.com. Avalon is cruising. Elevated.
I do have to ask, though, what is your take on kudzu now, Sean? Do you feel like people should just make peace with it? Should the war continue? Should we just take it as a lesson in the unforeseen consequences of our actions?
Well, I think the most interesting thing I learned about kudzu is that, and as you could probably tell from hearing the three of us who have had Southern experiences for it, is that it captured kind of a mythic imagination of sorts. It was something that took over, that was invasive, that was kind of the bad boy of invasive plant species. But it's not actually the most invasive species in the U.S. There are others that are far worse. And one of the interesting things I learned was basically that it's not as bad as we think. The kudzu, you know, is not really the vine that ate the South. It's the vine that ate the part of the South that we could see. Like, it's the vine that's on the highways and the railways. And so it had a much bigger impact on our imagination than on reality. So, for example, I think the U.S. Forest Service finally did a survey of how widespread kudzu was, in fact. And for a long time, you had heard something like 9-10 million acres of it in the southeastern U.S. But the surveys turned up that there were less than 200,000 acres of kudzu, which is less than 0.1% of the forest land in the southern United States. So it's not as big a problem as we think it is. It feels like it is, but it's something that has kind of just captured our collective imaginations.
So wait, this whole time I've been unfairly denigrating kudzu? I feel like a real pill. I've been unfair. I feel like one of the lower tier villains in a Captain Planet episode right now. I mean, what can we do to... to make things right with kudzu? What are the more invasive species that people don't think about? Let me turn my opprobrium to them.
I think Asian wisteria is the one that I heard them come up the most as being far more invasive than kudzu. But Ben, you're certainly not alone in feeling like you owe kudzu an apology. It's something that is just widespread in the South. And in some ways, it's a myth that's grown up alongside American history. You know, it grew at the same time the interstate highway system was growing. And so as we became more mobile, and as we saw more of the countryside than we'd ever seen before, we saw more kudzu because that's where it was. And it felt like it was a much worse problem than it really is. It was really the king of the forest. It was the king of the roadside. And if you grew up in the South looking out the car window, that's what you thought.
Yeah, this is an excellent point. And I think, you know, I think there's so much more to this story. If you want to hear it firsthand, folks, then get thee to your podcast platform of choice and join Sean Braswell on Flashback, the one of the newest podcasts from iHeart. We're just scratching the surface, not just of kudzu, not just of the apparently booming illegal cigarette trade or air conditioning, but we're touching on the vast unintended consequences of so many different periods, places, and events in U.S. history and in the history of the world overall. Sean, first off, thank you so much for taking the time to explore this with us today. For people who would like to learn more, where can they find Flashback?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. You can find Flashback, History's Unintended Consequences, on Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts. Each week on Ozzy.com, OZY.com/Flashback, I have lecture notes that I publish that go along with the series, which are just some other interesting tidbits, cutting room floor interviews, and other things related to the subjects that we talk about in the podcast.
Folks, this is a fantastic show. Don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourself today and let us know what you think. Also, don't hesitate to, Sean, I'm going to volunteer you here for some stuff. don't hesitate to reach out to Sean and the team with, or to us, with your own stories of unintended consequences throughout history. We would love to hear them. You can tell us on, Ridiculous History somewhere on the internet. We're all over the place. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Shout out to our Facebook community page, Ridiculous Historians. Sean, if someone would like to contact you directly on social, where should they go?
Yeah, I think the best way to reach me with regard to the podcast is by emailing flashback@ozzy.com. That's flashback@ozy.com. We've been inviting people to share with us their own stories of unintended consequences from their life or just stories from history that we might want to do a future episode about.
So check it out. That's flashback@ozzy.com. Thank you again so much, Sean Braswell. We look forward to exploring some more strange stories of history with you in the future. Thanks, as always, to Alex Williams, who composed that banging track you hear at the beginning of every Ridiculous History episode. Thanks, of course, to the usual, the Ridiculous Historian Irregulars, Christopher Hasiotis, Eves Jeffcoat, our research guru, Gabe Luzier, who refuses to tell us the correct way to pronounce his last name. That is a fact. And of course, thanks to my pal Noel here in spirit, Casey Pegram. Thanks to you. Also, what do you think? Should we ask people to send some kudzu recipes? If they send them, do you guys want to try them? I'll mail something to you, Sean.
Yeah, when we're all together again, I think we should cook up some kudzu and see what it's all about.
Thanks so much, folks. We'll see you next week.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait.
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com. /compatibility.